If our children are to flower, we need to sow them well and nurture them, cultivate them in rich and wholesome soil, clothe them in fine and decent opinion and mores, and direct them toward the highest light, to grow straight and tall, that they may take our place as we took that of those who planted us and made way for us. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 69, A Poem and a Tree. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10 Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
What is the most famous poem about trees? The answer is obvious. It is a literary work that actually declares that a poem could never achieve the aesthetic excellence embodied by a tree. This poem, of course, is Joyce Kilmer's Trees. I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. At certain points in the poem, it appears that the tree is being compared to a human being. Thus, we are told, in description, a tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray, a tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair. But then, the conclusion of the poem seems to say that the human being, the poet, is fallible and inadequate in contrast to the botanical creation of the divine. Thus, the final words, poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. For the Tanakh, it would seem that human beings are, in certain ways, very much akin to trees. For there are those commentators that interpret the Torah to be making an affirmative declaration when we are told in Deuteronomy, Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, man is akin to a tree in the field. The comparison between a human being and a tree lies at the heart of another well-constructed poem about trees, not by Joyce Kilmer, but by Philip Larkin. The trees are coming into leaf like something almost being said. The recent buds relax and spread. Their greenness is a kind of grief. Is it that they are born again and we grow old? No, they die too. Their yearly trick of looking new is written down in rings of grain. Yet still the unresting castles thresh in full-grown thickness every May. Last year is dead, they seem to say. Begin afresh, afresh, afresh. Here, the link between human mortality and the rebirth of nature lies at the heart of the poet's work. And yet, as I tend to note in my lectures about this poem, as lovely as I find it, I also, as I like to say in lectures, think it a bit un-Jewish, because Larkin sees in the spring of every new year the death of the past. Therein, he discovers the striking similarity to human beings. But for Jews, the past does not disappear. It actually is the source of our spiritual nourishment. It impacts us and defines us. Indeed, as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik commented, if the Torah is comparing a human being to a tree in the field, it is because human beings, like trees, have roots. The roots is the source of our nourishment. The roots is what ultimately helps define us. And the roots ensure that what has come before is borne by us as we flower in the future. And it is with this in mind that we may approach our mitzvah for the day, known as Orla, a reference to the forbidden first years of fruit that grow on a tree. We are told in Leviticus 19, verse 23, V'chi tavo el ha'aretz unetatem kol et machal v'araltem orlato et pirio, shalosh shanim yeh lachem arelim lo yeachel, or in the translation provided by Sefaria, when you enter the land and plant any tree for food, you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden for you, not to be eaten. The Torah then goes on to introduce another mitzvah for fruit that in the fourth year grows in the land of Israel. It is known as Neta Ravai. The fruit of the first 3 years are forbidden, and in the fourth year, the fruit is sacred, akin to the fruit of the second tithe that we discussed in yesterday's episode. This fruit must also be brought to Jerusalem and eaten there. As the verse states, U'bashana ha-revi'it yeh kol pirio kodesh hilulim la-Hashem. In the fourth year, all its fruit shall be set aside for jubilation before the Lord. What is the symbolism and significance of sacred scriptures, rules and restrictions, assertions and obligations regarding the first 4 years of a tree? Why would its fruit be forbidden in the first 3 years? Many answers have been suggested, and we, in this podcast, will not seek certainty. But surely any interpretation must begin with the fact, as is often noted, that the word with which the Torah forbids the first 3 years of a fruit tree finds its own striking biblical parallel. The fruit is called Orla, that which is not allowed. The orla is also that which is removed through the rite of circumcision. Thus, perhaps, in waiting to partake of the fruit of a tree, and then, in the land of Israel, ensuring that when we do first eat from it, we do so in Jerusalem, in a sacred setting, the Torah is asking us to see ourselves as akin to the trees themselves. For after all, as Deuteronomy declared, man is akin to a tree in the field. Human beings also must go through maturation, and those that oversee the growth of human beings must ensure that that growth is directed toward holiness and toward a relationship with the God that dwells in Jerusalem, in whose sacred city the farmers of the Holy Land would rejoice with the fourth year fruits of the mature tree. To see ourselves as tree-like beings, to see our children as tree-like, is to also remind ourselves of our own obligations. Or, as Leon Cass beautifully put it, if our children are to flower, we need to sow them well and nurture them, cultivate them in rich and wholesome soil, clothe them in fine and decent opinion and mores, and direct them toward the highest light, to grow straight and tall, that they may take our place as we took that of those who planted us and made way for us, so that in time they too may make way and plant. End quote. All of us involved in the growth and maturation of human beings hope and pray that our work bears fruit, and perhaps the law of Orla, whose very name links it to the obligation of Jewish parents to ensure a baby son's entry into the Abrahamic covenant, is a scriptural reminder of the parallel between the trees in the field and the human beings whose roots obligate their lives. An article from a bit over a decade ago described a danger facing Joyce Kilmer's poem. Shift in education priorities could topple trees. And we are told of Joyce Kilmer's poem in the article. It was memorized and recited by generations of students from prep school to reformatory. It comforted troops in the trenches of World War I. It was set to music and set in stone, declaimed in opera houses and vaudeville theaters, intoned at ceremonies each April on Arbor Day. It was, the critic Guy Davenport said, the one poem known by practically everybody. It is a century old this year, and it probably is on the road to oblivion. Trees has had an extraordinary shelf life, says Joan Shelley Rubin, a University of Rochester historian, but it may be ending. End quote. The article then goes on to describe how schools are teaching Joyce Kilmer's poem less and less. In the end, the question is not only what the poetic, pedagogic future of Joyce Kilmer's work is, but also whether the conclusion is true. Yes, only God can make a tree, but God asks human beings that are parents to see their children as the tree-like beings that, by divine grace, they have brought into the world, and to therefore ensure that in maturation and holiness, the roots that were of the past will live on in posterity. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.